potential students in the Northwest team. He is one of the best speakers that we have in the modern Orthodox world. It's as simple as that. One of the best speakers we have in the modern Orthodox world because of his breadth of knowledge, his depth of analysis, and who he is as a person is something that is very special to not just me. His character is not just special to me, but to basically every single female faculty teacher and Rebbe in this building. He is a role model to us. And I need you to understand that for that. I need you to put the final seats. I need you to understand, we're basically going to talk about now is having a Rebbe, and I need you to understand, and I want you to listen to me very carefully and look at me, please. I need you to understand, and I'm not just saying this because I'm not just saying that because Mikta Shibko Lefanav. Hurry up, please. Please hurry up and sit down. I'm saying it because I need you to understand that the people in this building that you have relationships with, your female faculty teachers and your Rebbeim, I'm telling you right now that all of us view him as our Rebbe. You understand? You understand what I'm saying? It's very important for you to hear that and understand that. Without further ado, please give your full, undivided attention to Rotarian.
Okay. Rabbi Wald, you just go over a lot of averus. Sheker being one of them. Thanks for the laugh. We have 20 minutes to climb Mount Everest. And there's no way we'll accomplish it, so let me first describe what it means to climb Mount Everest. We live in a very, very difficult world. Many challenges you girls and boys are facing that we didn't face 20, 30 years ago. Now is not the time and not the place. But one of the biggest challenges is, how do you know? Why should I be religious? How can I prove it? Because we live in a hyper-empirical world in which we assume that only rational and cognitive truths are acceptable and deliberate truths are voodoo and hocus-pocus. That has to shift. When I close my eyes at night, and I think about why I believe and do I believe, and by the way, sometimes I don't know. And living with questions is part of Avodas Hashem. If there's one lesson, not that you can package the Shoah into any one lesson, but one of the lessons to take from what we thought about yesterday is there's no answer to the Shoah. And don't try to resolve something so overwhelming with simplified packaging. And Jews have the ability to live with questions. And people before you live with a lot greater questions than anything you'll face. But when I lie down at night and close my eyes, you know what I think about? You know why I believe? Because I met an incredible person who loomed as Mount Everest, who knew the entire Torah like a file you pull out of your computer, who is the most moral, kind, caring person I've ever seen. And in my wildest imagination, I could never imagine myself replicating his life as hard as I would try. That's how distant his example was to me. And you know what? He told me about someone. He told me about his Rebbe, Reb Soloveitchik, who he described the way I just described Reb Lichtenstein to you. And Rabbi Soloveitchik told him about his Rebbe, Reb Chaim, who described, the Rav described Reb Chaim the same way I just described Reb Lichtenstein. So I just compute exponentially that as hard as I try, I can't imagine being on the same plane as Reb Aaron, let alone imagining being on the same plane as Rabbi Soloveitchik, let alone. But you know what the nice part about that is? I'm part of it. Those are my Rebbeim. That's my Masara. And if these people could believe in Hashem and study his Torah and live a moral life, and I'm connected to them, then I'm willing to accept their truths, not my own real truths. It doesn't have to be what my brain and my small little world is capable of mediating or computing. I can suspend my disbelief and rely upon roads that have been paved by bulldozers better than mine. And in a nutshell, that word is called Masorah. Belonging. And that's what I hope to give you here today, 3 days before Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's third Yahrzeit. Where do you belong? And to help you connect to where you belong, let me describe where I belong and how I belong, and then you can try to extrapolate and approximate. You walk into my house for Shabbos in the West Bank, you'll hear the entire table discussing Rabbi Soloveitchik's Torah. I learned in Rabbi Soloveitchik's shiur. Do you know how long I spent in his shiur? 6 months. By the time I got to his shiur, he was too weak and infirm, and he had to retire. So how is my Shabbos table filled with Rav Soloveitchik's Torah? Why am I part of that Masorah? Why are my children in the middle of the West Bank, where everyone's discussing Rav Kook, which is great? Everyone at my table knows that our world is shaped by Rabbi Soloveitchik. Because of the 6 months I spent with him, but for the last 40 years, I've spent with his Talmidim. So I'm not just a Talmud of Rabbi Soloveitchik, I'm a Talmid Talmideim. And that's the difference between a Gadol and a Rebbe. I have, Baruch Hashem, hundreds of Talmidim that I've been able to influence. I hope I'll influence their lives and their families' lives. I don't imagine I'll influence their Talmidim's lives or their grandchildren's lives. I'm not that type of person. A Gadol has not just Talmidim, but Talmidim. We say it on Thursday, Talmideim, et Talmidei Talmideim. So I'm a Talmid of Rabbi Soloveitchik, more or less, having never met him, more or less, because he was a weak, infirm man who could hardly talk. Here's your chance to be, to Rav Lichtenstein, what I was to the Rav. You're not that far away. In 50 years, people will talk about Rav Lichtenstein like we talk about the Chofetz Chaim, and Rav Aaron Cutler, and Rav Kook. Back in the yellow pages of history, you're 3 years away from his death. I imagine half of the parents in this room have read something about him. You're a Bayan, as Rabbi will discuss, either learned with him directly or were inspired by him. That's where you belong. So one day people will ask you, what do you believe? What's your Masorah? Because I met great rabbis, and you'll list all the rabbis you met in Frisch and in your communities when you get to Israel. And those rabbis told me about this man named Rav Lichtenstein. And the way they described him is the way I see those rabbis. And I can't even imagine it. I'm part of that Masorah. I'm going to try to understand this world and try to decipher Hashem and try to find him. Don't acquit yourself in personal exertion. When you close your eyes and it doesn't make sense all the time and it won't always make sense, here I am. My Rebbeim are holding one to me, and their Rebbeim are holding one to them, and their Rebbeim are holding one to them, through Gordian knots and through muscles that far outstrip our own muscles. And that's how you make your way back to Har Sinai. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, wow, this is a real challenge. 10 minutes, 14 minutes, right? 10, 15, right? He had the entire Torah indexed. Not even knew the entire Torah. He had an index. He could draw analogies, comparisons. I don't know how much this will make sense to you, but it certainly will make sense to some of the teachers in this room. I literally felt as if I was learning not from a Gadol, not from a Rishon like the Rambam. He knew Torah like a Tana. I literally felt as if I was learning Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva didn't know Gemara. There was no Gemara. He knew Torah. He knew the system. He didn't just know pages. He knew the. You know something so well that you're seeing it from 15,000 feet up rather than three lines on a page or two lines on a comparative text. But what made him so impressive, and what makes me think about him at least 10, times a day. When I think about him, and I promise you, I think about him no less than 10 times a day, was not how much Torah he knew. Was the type of person he was. You see all these books? They are great for teaching you matzah, chametz, davening, tefillin, taras ha-mishpacha. You learn it out of books. They're not so good at teaching you bein adam l'chaverah as well. Because the way you treat other people, it's context specific, which generation you live in, what types of language you use, who people are. To be excellent at your interpersonal life, you need to see people that you can model yourselves after. You're old enough to take life seriously. You're in 11th grade. I know the curve of high school. You're past 10th grade. You've already done that. You get the concept. You're in. You want to take yourself seriously. You want to take your life seriously. You want to be something. You want to have a life that's driven. Sometimes maybe a little bit too far for you, but I want to push you to a different stage. Sometimes boys ask me when they leave yeshiva Rebbe, what will it take for me to be successful in 30 years when you see me on the street? Well, hard question because everyone's different. So, well, here's the question. If you can answer this question affirmatively, you're a success. And if not, I won't use the F word because you never use the failure word, but maybe you're not as successful as. I want to ask you the following question. What do you live your life for beyond yourself? It can't just be your life is for your own comfort and luxury and food and car and vacation. There's got to be some ideal. You're living for something else. You live for your family. You live for your people, you live for Hashem, you got to live for something beyond yourself, otherwise you're just egocentric. And you'll shuffle through this world for 80, 90 years, you'll accumulate what you can, and you'll die with a limper. And the world won't notice that you lived in it. As opposed to leaving this world and saying, wow, this world is different because you lived in it. It doesn't have to be grandiose if you'll be a leader, because today the word leader is just a mask for hot air. And attention-grabbing activities. The leadership is very, very quiet. You can be a leader just of being a great mother and a great father and raising a great family. That's where leadership begins and ends sometimes. It doesn't have to be public. Your picture is going to be on a wall. Think about the Holocaust images you've seen in the last day and the stories we've told about those people. One day, not Chas v'Shalom through that tragic form, but one day you'll pass on this world, your picture is going to be on a wall. It's going to be Pesach night, and your great-great-grandchildren will be looking at your picture. What stories do you want them to tell about you? What did you accomplish, and how did you change this world by bringing Hashem closer to humanity and opening people's eyes to see it? So it's easy to learn about tefillin and matzah and Shabbos and books. When it comes to bein adam l'chaverah, not as much. So here's a good challenge for you during this weekend. Those of you who want to take this seriously, too brief to really give you a full expose of who this person was, I'll just give you a challenge. Go home today. Sit down, either in your mind or on your piece of paper or on your cell phone. Make a list of three traits that have nothing to do with mitzvahs, per se. Not matzah, not taras ha-mishpacha. Three traits. Humility, friendship, loyalty, selflessness, mindfulness, sensitivity, compassion, respect, or others. And itemize three traits you want to try to improve on. And then draw a line from each of those traits and an arrow. And on the other side of the page, write the name of someone that you can model yourself after regarding that trait. And it doesn't have to be a frisch Rebbe or female family. It can be. I'm sure it will be. It could be a family member. And you know what? It could be someone you've read about. It could be someone you've met who's not Jewish. Because from Jews do not have a monopoly on integrity.
there are people of integrity all around you. And perhaps if so many messages come in my mind, that's a great message about my Rebbe Reb Lichtenstein, because he really, really loved people. He was a humanist. He believed in people. He respected people. And the world you inhabit makes you believe it. It hurts me to tell you this, but someone's got to tell you, and I'm sure you've heard it before. One of the fallouts of social media is you're convinced that the world is a very dark place, because that's what gains attention on social media. And it's not true. 99% of the people in this world are good people. You just don't see them. And you can't think that you're entering a world of evil and cynicism and sarcasm and fraud. You're not living in that world unless you create the perception of that world that it becomes your reality. So there's so many good people for you to take lessons from. And we felt as if we were watching someone, not just learning the entire Torah, performing every mitzvah, beyond our wildest imaginations. We would watch him in the Beis Medrash. He would leave the Beis Medrash when he would take buses back to Yerushalayim 4 minutes and 19 seconds before the bus came. Did you hear what I said? 4 minutes and 19 seconds. He closed his sefer and he would run to the bus, because he didn't want to waste time. He told me once that in his life, he never took an afternoon nap. Never. He woke up with whatever level of strength he had that day. He worked as hard as he could to serve Hashem. He went to sleep. Why would he waste time by sleeping in midday? So we saw all that. But we also saw someone who had such respect for human beings. Let me tell you, just by way of making it graphic, what we saw at weddings, because he went to many weddings. I'll tell you the four stages of what we saw. Maybe one of you will be my student one day, and maybe one of you will invite me to a wedding, and I will courteously ask you, can you please arrange a ride, because I don't have a car. Not Rav Aaron. Why should he be served? He took four buses for hours to weddings up north, because why should he ask another human being to serve him? We would fight with him. I promise you, at the end of the shiur, he had probably stacks of sfarim. I'm not exaggerating. Like this. Two full stacks. Of Rav Aaron Schwartz, remember? Two full stacks. And you carry one stack like this, and one stack like this, and you go bounding over the stairs. And we plead with him, Rebbe, please let us carry your sfarim for you. And we got the tunnel works with him. And at some point, after constantly refusing, he said to us, he said, Rebbe, don't you know you're depriving us of a mitzvah of Shemesh Talmid HaChachamim? We want to serve you. That's what it's about. He looked us dead in the eye and said, I know, but I can't. You hear that? I know that I should be letting you do this for me. I just can't. I don't have that in my constitution to let people help me. He would get off of the airport. I'd pick him up in the airport, and he would refuse to let me carry his suitcase. It's embarrassing. He'd be walking as a 60-year-old man with three suitcases in a car, and I'd be carrying the car keys. I said, Rebbe, please. To this day, you can't get a suitcase out of my hands. Why is a taxi cab driver less of a person than I am? He should carry, I need to go from place to place, I have to pay him, he has to carry my bag. Hashem gives me health, I'm no more of a person than he is. He has his own dignity, I'm sure. His dignity, probably even more compromised than I am, is the way people treat him. So there's any reason to give him more dignity, now's the time. Let me tell you what I thought about Rav Aaron yesterday. Yesterday I was driving to Migdal Oz. I don't know if any girls are thinking one day I'd go to Migdal Oz. I was teaching on Thursday. It's right down the block. It's a girls' yeshiva of the Gush. And I was driving, And I came to a traffic circle. And on the right of the circle, I was in the circle, I had the right of way, was an Arab car. And I saw that Israeli driver jumped ahead of me. Do you know how much Arabs suffer in Israel on the roads? Probably no one talks to you about this. Do you know how hard it is to be a Palestinian living in the West Bank? I know, because I live there and I'm friends with them. If I go to Yerushalayim, it takes me 40 minutes. For them to go to Yerushalayim, it takes them 2 hours. Rightfully, there's no choice. We have to. It hurts. Past these roadblocks, and I whisk through, and they're sitting there. 99% of these people are normal citizens, and they go through strip searches and drugs. There's no choice. My son's in Givati. He's doing that right now, as we talk. Actually, he's home for Shabbos, but. So I said, this person suffers enough. Let me give him the right of way. And I motioned to the Arab to drive ahead. Because the least I could do is to give a human being dignity when he's suffering so much. That's what I thought about Ravon. Yeah, I didn't think about it. It was just instinctive. Because that's what he showed us. I know the adults here in the room would be shocked. He used to give tramps to Palestinians. He would stop on the side of the road and take elderly Palestinian women on their way until they convince him, Rebbe, it's just too dangerous, especially in the age of kidnapping. It's just, Rebbe, you can't. So that's how he would get to the wedding. And now the wedding's there, and everyone's dancing. You know, at a wedding, the Rosh Hashiva comes in for that 1 5-minute dance in the middle and then leaves. Not Rev Lichtenstein. He danced from the opening bell to the final whistle with full energy as a 75-year-old. He just danced and danced. What's more important than making him happy? Well, you got it. I don't stop dancing at a wedding. And my Rebbe looking at me, I'm embarrassed. I'm going to sit down and be tired. Then, after the dancing stopped, he's an important person. There's a lineup of people that want to speak to this person. Come on, door. Who is he speaking with for hours? The elderly Bubby and Zadie in the room that no one pays attention to at the wedding because they're in a wheelchair off on the side. Everyone's forgetting them, running for the pictures and for the smorgasbord. And he's sitting there for hours talking to Aunt Zelda. Hours. What can they be talking about? And then the kicker comes. He didn't have a ride home because he took buses. So this was our chance to get Rav Aaron in the car with us and take him home. And of course, he accepted the offer. And then we walked to the car, my wife and I. And of course, the Gadol Hador is coming in your car. You give him the front seat. I'm going to take a front seat and separate a husband and his wife on the night they're meant to be together. He refused to get to the front seat. He wouldn't get in the car. He sat in the back seat. He had long legs. Sometimes our car is in over his nebas and nose. So girls and boys, where do you think I sit in the car? In the back seat. Whether it's a Talmud giving me a ride, if his wife's there, or a Palestinian worker that I pick up, who, I'm your worker, I should sit in the back. No, you're older than me. You sit in the front. I'm not here, chas v'shalom, to promote my behavior. I'm here to give you an autobiographical sketch of what it means to have role models who show you three things. And I know we have to end, so I'll end here. Three words. Chesed is what you do. Midos are who you are. It's a lot more important than what you do. You do a chesed begrudgingly. You have to, people are watching. That also counts. That also matters. This is, Hashem gave you all these traits. How do you sculpt them? How do you put them together? How do you assemble them? If we turn to Shemayim, Hashem says, wow. Look at the return package I'm receiving. I sent out an Neshama with potential. Look at what's coming back at me. A titan. A giant. Incredible person. He changed the world. Sitting there crying Wednesday night in Israel. 6 Holocaust survivors come in light torches. And each one of them has a little movie prepared about their story of escape and survival and the moving to Israel. This one had 30 descendants. This one had 40 descendants, children, grandchildren. Chesed is what you do. Midos are who you are. And then there's the third thing. And I'll translate it into one English word for you. You've heard the phrase, and sometimes you confuse it with chesed and midos. It's something totally different. It's not chesed. Chesed is a poor person, a hungry person, an ill person who don't need help. Midos are just being just a good person. Here's the third thing. It's called Derech Eretz. And it sounds very loose. Here's a good word. One word. It's called respect. Do you respect other people, especially when they're different from you? And right now, right here, at your age, here's what's becoming a little bit of a challenge. Because you're finding yourselves, you're defining yourselves, you're finding values that make you excited, hopefully the right values. You're becoming passionate about them. Hopefully that will continue next year and then Mirz Hashem and Eretz Yisrael during these years of identity building. But you know what? Girls, boys, people are different. Don't turn the world to black and whites. People are complex. Don't judge people until you walk a mile in their shoes. Give people a benefit of the doubt. Believe in people. Show them that belief. I will never meet a person who respected other people the way this man respected human beings. Because he understood that a life is a world, and each world is different than every world. There's no way you can neatly package it into your preconceived, prejudicial perspectives. Love what you are, but understand that people have their own values and dreams and dignity and aspirations. And you climb into their world rather than judging their world by yours. So, hurts me to say goodbye to you. There's a lot here. This is a great man. He's part of your world. Try to make him more part of your world. Maybe I'll have an opportunity at some further point to speak a little bit more extensively. But Monday is his yard sale. Here's a good challenge. Don't forget. Go home tonight, this afternoon. It takes 2 minutes. I promise you, that if you do it this afternoon at 6 o'clock, we'll thank you. Not by calling the left out, but you know if that made sense. That works. I'm happy I did it. Three traits you want to become. Three people, we're going to highlight those traits to you. And then go get them. Shabbat shalom, everyone. Shabbat shalom. Thank you.
Following students in Cody Rope 31 now, Jacob Smith, Caleb Intel, and Daniel Morrison. In room 31, this Jacob Smith, Caleb Intel, and Daniel Morrison. Please go to room 31.
I just texted my husband. Ronnie,
thank
and I just
you.
This morning said to my fellow female tenant,
Shabbos everyone, Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Shalom, three.
Why would Hashem smell the world? Sure. So, Uncle
all the rabbis in Israel are like, yeah.
Here's a salvation.
He works at Gush and the Gush.
I understand. I'm under.
Where is Hashem?
Gush's boys, and then, yeah.
Israel's in the bad, like, sorry, Gemara. It's not too bad. Everyone's like,
what's that, huh?
Your real question
is,
I do know
a
that.
Lot of them.
That's a question.
It's like growing.
Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat
Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Joel Soloveitchik.
Joel Soloveitchik. Who's your father?
David Soloveitchik.
That's your name?
Julia Stone.
So, nice to meet you, Julia.
They're distant.
Rachel Piatnika.
Right, you're like...
Piatnika.
Yeah.
What's your father's name?
Spelled with a W.
It's like a...
You have an uncle named Svi?
It's like a transliteration.
So send out in their regards. We're in covenants together.
It's like a great-great.
Great-great-great
uncle.
Don't let your uncle tell him that he was the best baseball player in the second grade. Urban legend. I went before him. Second grade.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Do you know Daniel Reisler?
Yeah.
I know Daniel Riedler.
Really?
I taught him in Ramaz. Yeah.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Gilad Holter.
Nice to meet you, Gilad. Who's your father?
Avram Holter.
Shabbat Shalom. What's your name?
Hannah Carvin.
Nice to meet you, Hannah.
Did he go to Gush?
Shabbat Shalom. What's your name?
What's your name?
Shia.
Shia what?
Shia Bolton.
Bolton.
Yeah.
So nice to meet you. What's your name?
Nike Nature.
Yeah. So nice to meet
you. I would love to shake your hand. I'm just not feeling so awesome.
Tell me, go to your phone.
Okay. Yeah, you sick. Yeah.
That would make up behind you. Come stop for a
minute.
Great.
Very beautiful.
Sorry, I said too much. Oh, go ahead.
Ethan.
I don't know if you remember, I was in Israel with Rob here on the Hesner program and like Chomsky for like the second. So yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for the enjoying your speech. Yeah.
Yeah, we're cussing. Everyone has to be there real quick. Ethan Schefter, he's going to kill us. 13 others. 14. I'll be in the night shift, probably. One.
What? I'll see you right down in the cola. What's your name?
Sorry,
up there. Also in the cola?
Yeah,
who's your dad? Shalom. If you send the note to your father, so you're both coming in the cola?
Yeah, I was there last summer.
Right. I saw you for about 10 seconds.
Okay, so Scott, very nice to meet you.
Yes.
I just said to my fellow female faculty members that we were talking about how Martin Luther is very fortunate. Last year I was lucky that I taught seniors
It's so inspiring, and then I got a phone call that you're here.
Very exciting surprise.
You're not here for the 70 and 70?
I'm here for the 77 day, but I always try to be here for the outset as well.
It's so. In Teaneck?
The
yard site? Not the
yard site. Right. Uh-huh.
No, where are they commemorating? Is there...
So, in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, he's on the ocean.
Right,
because
I guess.
That's
right. Right.
There was
that
2 weeks from
Sunday.
2 weeks from
Sunday. Is that
YU
or...
It's like a very busy day. It's also the OU Tower Day.
Right.
My daughter Aliza was here, so I'll get the lowdown for her.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Old soldier. Two old soldiers.
The young world. Yes.
I will call my son. I do teach it here.
I teach a night seder, so there's a night seder. Sure.